Sunday Evangelium with Father Marcus Holden on Mary's month of May.
May is a big month for English Catholics because it's Mary's month. All the things that May reminds us of, warmth, hope, transformation, blossom and bloom, are all the things that Mary brings to our souls and our spiritual lives. Mary has a special relationship with England. This country was called from medieval times the Dowry of Mary. This week we're preparing for the great feast day of our first missionary to the English, Saint Augustine, who landed on our shores in 597 AD. And what was the original Christianity that he brought to this land? Well, first of all, it was Catholic. It was Roman Catholic. It came from the heart of a pope, St. Gregory the Great. When he landed, St. Augustine brought with him relics, icons, illuminated gospel books, and a processional crucifix, and many other things. All the things we associate with our Catholic faith. But this original Catholicism was also Marian, profoundly related to Mary. The gospel book that still exists to this day, that's kept in Cambridge, that came with that mission to England, was the Gospel of Luke, which tells so many of the stories about Mary. And in that gospel book, there is an image of Our Lady. No sooner had those missionary monks arrived in England and converted the first Anglo-Saxons than they dedicated churches to Mary. Even in Canterbury itself, one of the first churches was dedicated to her. And within a few hundred years, there were more churches dedicated to Mary in England than in any other country of the world. Gregory the Great, of course, himself, had been a great devotee of Our Lady. Famously, he carried round the icon of St. Luke, which is in Santa Maria Maggiore to this day, around the streets of Rome at the time of plague, bringing about a miraculous healing. The earliest poetry about Mary in the West, in a barbarian, non-Latin tongue, was written in England. Cynewulf, in the 8th century, wrote this: "Hail, thou glory of this middle earth, the purest woman throughout all the world, of those that were from immemorial time, how rightly art thou named by all endowed with gifts of speech. All mortals throughout the earth declare full blithe of heart that thou art bride of him that ruleth the empyreal sphere." This country was called the Dowry of Mary because the Catholic kings of old dedicated the land to her. We know from the Wilton diptych that's found in the National Art Gallery in London that the country was dedicated to her. There's a painting that shows the very event. But even from the time of Edward the Confessor before the Norman invasion, England was specially dedicated to Mary. And at Agincourt, the cry was for Our Lady and her dowry. The dowry, traditionally, was the gift that the woman brought to a spousal union with her husband. But in medieval English times, the dowry had a reversed meaning. It was the special gift given to the bride for her personal keeping, her personal possession, so that if she were ever widowed, it would be very close to her and kept and assured. And I think in this sense, England is Mary's dowry. It is her personal possession that she will not let go. The great devotion to her, of course, was almost extinguished at the time of the Reformation. On a dark day in 1538, many of her most ancient statues, some of them miraculous, were brought together in London, including the statue of Our Lady of Walsingham, and thrown on a bonfire in Chelsea. It looked as if 1,000 years of Marian devotion had gone up in smoke. But this is her dowry. Mary would not let it go. She had appeared here at Walsingham 950 years ago exactly, appearing to Rachildis, explaining that she wanted Walsingham to be England's Nazareth, and she gave the brown scapular to St. Simon Stock here in England in the 13th century, the devotion which has spread throughout the world to this day. It was Mary who assured the future of her dowry. She gave heart to the martyrs. In spite of dungeon, fire, and sword, they preserved the faith that she inspired in their hearts. England was not to be like the other countries of Northern Europe. The faith would survive, and it was Mary who appeared to Blessed Dominic Barbary, the Italian Passionist friar, and told him to go to England to convert it. Barbary, of course, received Blessed John Henry Newman into the one fold of the Redeemer, and Newman himself would write in his second spring sermon how Mary had brought about a new springtime for the church. Arise, my love, my dove, my beautiful one, and come. The winter is now past, and the rain is over and gone. The flowers have appeared in our land. It is the time for thy visitation. Arise, Mary, and go in thy strength to that north country, which was once thine own, and take possession of a land which knows thee not. Arise, Mother of God, and with thy thrilling voice speak to those who labour with child and are in pain, till the babe of grace leaps within them. Shine on us, dear lady, with thy bright countenance, like the sun in his strength, O Stella Matutina, O harbinger of peace, till our year is one perpetual May. From thy sweet eyes, from thy pure smile, from thy majestic brow, let 10,000 influences rain down, not to confound or overwhelm, but to persuade, to win over thine enemies. O Mary, my hope, O Mother undefiled, fulfill to us the promise of this spring. And through Mary's influence, the Catholic faith just won't leave this country. It bugs our critics. Constantly, Catholicism is on the mind of the people. Whenever an issue in morality or faith comes up, it is to the Catholic faith that the media turns, to the Church, which is despised by many, is still consulted by everyone. It is, despite all the difficulties, the largest practicing denomination in the country these days. And it's inspired so many of the great figures of modern English history. For instance, J.R.R. Tolkien, who wrote the most popular work of the 20th century, The Lord of the Rings, said that his whole conception of beauty, both in simplicity and majesty, were inspired by her. So our devotion to Mary is not a sideshow, a nostalgic piety, or something interesting for those who like history. It's right at the heart of our spiritual warfare. Mary stands for the truth about humanity. She reminds us, through her Son, that we are made in the image of God and called to glory. She reminds us that our hearts are for God, to be dedicated with purity. The meaning of our bodies is a spousal one. She also teaches us that the child in the womb is precious and to be defended at all costs. All the challenges of the day are met through her example. Mary is also known traditionally as Star of the Sea. We are in rough seas in this present age, and maybe in our own personal spiritual lives, the waves are very high. Nevertheless, we look to Mary as sailors look to the star to guide them to port, to that safety of the harbour, that eternal harbour. One of our most popular hymns is Hail Queen of Heaven, and I'll leave you with those words. Hail Queen of Heaven, the ocean star, guide of the wanderer here below, throne on life's surge, we claim thy care, save us from peril and from woe, Mother of Christ, Star of the Sea, pray for the wanderer, pray for me. Amen.
And while to him, O rain. Such we pay on bended knee. Do thou, bright queen, star of the sea.